Today, on this episode of the PeerDirect Special Spotlight.
We've now seen more than a decade of follow-up from the Affinity trial, with a median follow-up of about 11 years. So how do you interpret these long-term data, and what do they tell us about the role of pertuzumab added to trastuzumab-based chemotherapy for patients with HER2-positive early breast cancer?
Today, Drs. Wax and Sammons joined the podcast to discuss NCCN 2026 Breast Cancer Congress updates in this PeerDirect Specialist Spotlight. All opinions expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect the views of this educational initiative supporters.
Hello, I'm Ada Wax. I'm a breast medical oncologist at Dana-Farber Cancer Institute here in Boston, Massachusetts.
And I'm Dr. Sarah Sammons, also a breast medical oncologist at Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston.
Thank you for joining us. It's been a few weeks since the NCCN 2026 Breast Cancer Congress in Chicago, and we've had some time to reflect on the data presented, particularly updates related to HER2-positive breast cancer and its many evolving treatment strategies. Sarah, are you ready to get started?
Absolutely, Ada.
Sarah, let's start in the early stage setting. We've now seen more than a decade of follow-up from the Affinity trial, with a median follow-up of about 11 years. So how do you interpret these long-term data, and what do they tell us about the role of pertuzumab added to trastuzumab-based chemotherapy for patients with HER2-positive early breast cancer?
So I think what the Affinity 11-year data showed us, and for anyone who's not familiar with Affinity, Affinity was the landmark phase 3 trial that looked at the addition of pertuzumab to chemotherapy and trastuzumab in the adjuvant setting for stage 2 and 3 HER2-positive breast cancer. And we've known for a very long time that the addition of pertuzumab to chemo and trastuzumab followed by pertuzumab, trastuzumab, leads to an improvement in invasive disease-free survival. But now what we see at 11 years for the first time is that there is an improvement in overall survival, which is essentially driven by the node-positive population. There was not much of a difference in the node-negative population for either invasive disease-free survival or overall survival, but we're really seeing a benefit both in the intention-to-treat population and driven by mostly the node-positive population. Staying in the early stage setting, the 2026 NCCN updates also highlight an important change for patients with residual disease after neoadjuvant therapy. Trastuzumab deruxtecan, or T-DXd, is now listed as a Category 1 adjuvant option for high-risk patients who do not achieve a PCR with HER2-positive disease. How do you think about selecting patients for this escalation strategy? And what factors influence whether you might consider adjuvant T-DXd for a patient who did not achieve a PCR?
It's a great question, Sarah, and I think really exciting data from the DESTINY-Breast05 trial. I was glad to see it added so rapidly, actually, into the NCCN guidelines. So just to refresh everybody's memory about the design of the DESTINY-Breast05 trial, this was a trial that took patients who had residual disease after receiving chemo plus HER2-directed therapy for early-stage HER2-positive breast cancer and randomized them to either 14 cycles of trastuzumab deruxtecan, or T-DXd, versus the historical standard 14 cycles of the alternative antibody drug conjugate, T-DM1, which was initially established about 10 years ago based on the Catherine trial. And I think it's important to point out, and it's important when we think about which patients are we going to go to the adjuvant T-DXd for, that the patients who are eligible for DESTINY-Breast05 were really a particularly high-risk population. This was a trial whose eligibility criteria selected for higher-risk patients than even the Catherine trial had. So in order to get on to DESTINY-Breast05, you had to either have not just residual disease, but residual disease in your lymph nodes, so a particularly high-risk situation, or if you had residual disease just in the breast, you had to have had very high-risk, clinically staged disease at the outset prior to receiving your neoadjuvant chemo and HER2-directed therapy. So that, for me, those eligibility criteria do guide the patients that I would select for this regimen in clinical practice. This was a positive trial. There was about a half as many IDFS events in the T-DXd arm as the T-DM1 arm. So this was a statistically significant, meaningful risk reduction for our high-risk patients. But I think that I would really adhere pretty closely to the eligibility criteria of the trial when I decide who has high enough risk to warrant the T-DXd. I would certainly use this in patients with residual nodal disease, and I would take their initial clinical staging into account as well. This wasn't a trial that enrolled patients with clinical T2N0 disease who then had a few millimeters of residual disease in the breast. That sort of moderate risk situation, I would still use adjuvant T-DM1. For a patient like that. But for the highest risk patients, I think T-DXd is a great adjuvant option.
I fully agree, because T-DXd is not without side effects. 14 cycles of T-DXd has nausea, the continued hair loss, and then the main risk we have to think about when prescribing this is pneumonitis. Two patients actually in the trial died from pneumonitis, so we need to do those CT scans every 6 weeks, counsel our patients about pneumonitis. It's really important. Shifting to metastatic disease, ADCs like trastuzumab deruxtecan have really transformed the treatment landscape starting in the metastatic setting. T-DXd in particular has become a key therapy and is now recognized as standard of care, even moving into first line from second line and previously third line. How are you thinking about the role of ADCs, particularly T-DXd, in metastatic HER2-positive breast cancer? And how are you sequencing, let's say T-DXd and T-DM1 in the metastatic setting?
Absolutely. I think, the availability of trastuzumab deruxtecan T-DXd has really revolutionized the outcomes that we see for many patients with HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer. I think it's very clear at this point that essentially all HER2-positive metastatic patients should receive T-DXd somewhere along their treatment course. We know that the significant PFS, and then importantly, so far the only OS benefit that we've seen with T-DXd and HER2-positive metastatic disease has been in the second-line setting. So I think many patients with HER2-positive metastatic disease are appropriate to receive T-DXd in the second-line setting. But the DESTINY-Breast09 trial reported out in 2025 also showed us that this agent, T-DXd, in combination with pertuzumab, gives us also a really nice PFS benefit in the first-line setting. So for specific patients with usually especially high-risk features, potentially those who have recurrent disease, those are hormone receptor negative, I would be using T-DXd potentially in the first-line setting, whereas for other patients, if I didn't give it in the first line, I would certainly be getting it to them in the second-line setting where it has this OS benefit. I think it's a very open question. We have very little in the way of evidence-based answers to what should we do in subsequent lines after a patient progresses on T-DXd. I think you make a great point. Switching to an alternative ADC with a different mechanism of payload, like T-DM1, makes sense. We've seen some real-world data that tells us you probably still get a median of 6 to 7 months of PFS out of T-DM1 after progression on T-DXd. We've seen, again, some essentially real-world data or cohort data out of France in small numbers showing that with the ducatinib-based HER2-CLIMB regimen, you again get about a median PFS of 6 months out of that regimen for patients who have had progression of their disease on T-DXd. So we have these small cohorts, relatively small numbers and limited data that tell us other HER2-targeted agents with different mechanisms do work post-T-DXd, but it's really an area where we need new drug development and additional evidence.
Fully agree. Thanks for joining me today, Ada. This has been great.
My pleasure. And thank you for joining us for our discussion on the evolving guidelines from the NCCN 2026 Breast Cancer Congress and how it may influence our care and treatment of patients with HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer.
And that's today's Specialist Spotlight. Thank you for joining us for this episode of PeerDirect Medical News Podcast. For more stories like these, visit us at PeerDirect.com. thoughts, comments, or suggestions, please leave us a review on your preferred listening platform or email us at editorial@peerdirect.com. Listen and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also download our Amazon Alexa Flash Briefing Medical News Roundup and just ask, "What's my flash briefing?" Thanks today to our guests, Drs. Wax and Sammons. Join me next time for the episode where we cover the latest stories in the world of medicine.